And good morning, good morning. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And go ahead and guess, what are we going to talk about this morning on Positively Revolting? You know, yesterday's hearings were really something for many of us. And I got to say, it is something I was really unable to block out. And to some extent, you know, I felt an obligation to hear it as somebody who follows current events, as somebody who hosts talk radio, and as somebody who experienced date rape in the early 80s and wanted to actually hear how Blasey Ford was being treated. And also wanted to see how far we've come in the fall of patriarchy. How far have we come in dismantling rape culture? Well, my answer is not very far at all, right? And so it occurred to me that much like I needed to, tell my truth, there are many other women and many other people that have been assaulted that also need some space to share with each other what has happened, to break the silence, to tell our stories, and to be heard. The question that has been put forth so often about why a 15-year-old girl attending a party she knew she shouldn't have been at wouldn't have then reported the sexual assault that occurred there, that anyone can ask that question authentically blows my mind and tells me they really know nothing of a teenage girl's experience. And maybe they ought to start learning about that. If they are in fact holding the most powerful seats in the nation, if in fact their job is to represent everyone, including teenage girls, maybe they should know a little bit more about our lives. So I'm going to go ahead and throw the phone number out for talk radio this morning. If you want to join me, please do. We'd love to hear from you here. And that number is 503-231-8187. Please do call. Again, this is a time for all of us sharing our truth together, because that time to be silent is over. We're not teenagers anymore. Some of us maybe still are and are currently experiencing this, and that's horrifying. And so please, let us now all speak out loudly so that maybe we can stop this. Maybe the world will hear us. Maybe we can channel our rage into an awesome force for social change. Maybe we have gotten through the time of silence. We realize our silence does not protect us. Our silence does not help to heal us. So, with that, let's just... Again, that phone number, 503-231-8187. In my situation, I was a 17-year-old girl in 1983, and I had rather strict parents. So, as I've often said, strict parents make crafty children, and I learned some really good ways of sneaking out of the house. I was pretty competent at coming up with plausible excuses and ditching whatever plan that was after being dropped off and hightailing it to whatever I wasn't supposed to be doing. And in just that way, I was hanging out with a boy who was held in pretty high esteem in my peer group. He was the cool older brother of a friend of mine. He'd been off to college. He was 21. He was worldly. He was sophisticated. And so when he started paying attention to me and said that, hey, he would drive me in his car, woohoo, this guy had a car, to, you know, go bird watching, I thought that was pretty dang cool. And I took him up on that offer. And I felt pretty special. Somewhere towards the end of that day, when he got, you know, kind of flirty with me again, I felt pretty special. And I thought, wow, this cool guy who I've held in high esteem for some time thinks I'm worth flirting with. Again, pretty special. When we started kissing, I believe in the teenage parlance would be and stuff, he got pretty aggressive. And I thought, well, that's not where I want to go. Yeah, flirting is great. Yeah, kissing is fun. But I had no intention of having sex with this guy. And the argument ensued. He was very angry. I had led him on. I had hurt him with my rejection. This was all my responsibility somehow. And he was quite upset. Maybe he wouldn't hang out with me anymore. And somehow or another, that seemed horrible, that I would blow this chance to hang out with this cool guy because I was being a baby, because I was acting like a baby. I remember apologizing and telling him, you know, it's just not what I wanted to do right then. It's just like stuff and such and things. And gosh, I should probably be getting home. And so that day ended kind of awkwardly. And I felt kind of weird about it. Weird in so many directions. I really couldn't put my finger on. Weird that he got so aggressive, because that didn't really fit the picture of him I had in my head. Weird that I was hesitant, that I didn't just, what? What did I want? I wasn't sure. I was confused. I was 17. And I didn't have a whole lot of experience, let's just say. So when he called me later in the week and said all was forgiven and he'd like to hang out again to, you know, kind of prove that all was forgiven, did I want to? You know, I mean, obviously, you know, if he could get past that moment, obviously I could, because really it was only him that had been wronged in the first place with that whole, you know, sudden rejection thing. And I thought, well, yeah, so cool. We'll hang out again. And obviously he knows. He knows that that's not something I'm interested in doing. So he wouldn't be a jerk. I mean, this is somebody we knew. This is a friend. And so, then, after some time of hanging out, and all through that afternoon, the conversation continuously being pushed to sex, I kind of went along with the conversation. I didn't want to be called a prude. I sure as heck didn't want to be called a baby again. So I thought I'd try a different approach. I just decided to tell him, hey, you know, I'm really not into this. actually, I like girls. And so I kind of thought maybe that would, you know, end things. I thought that he would hear that and respect it. When in fact, he heard it as a challenge. And I remember clearly him telling me that the only reason I liked girls was because a guy hadn't shown me how good it could be. Every time I tried to leave, he would alternate between being super upset and super hurt. And it would catch me. And I vacillated between being totally afraid and out of my league and needing to rescue him and take care of his feelings. And at some point, I realized that his feelings mattered more than mine. He was this cool guy. He'd already been to college. He knew what was going on in the world. I was obviously confused. What I was feeling in this moment didn't matter anymore. I totally disengaged and decided, you know, his feelings mattered more. And so, there it happened. the act that for years I didn't know was rape. I didn't have that word for it. Because to me, growing up female in the 70s, rape was something that happened on dark streets with strangers. Rape was not something that happened within a family or within a circle of friends. The fact that I had put myself in that situation clearly told me it was my fault. I knew I couldn't tell my parents that this had happened because I'd already disobeyed them. And if I couldn't tell my parents, I sure as hell couldn't tell the police. And I sure as hell couldn't stand up to any kind of questioning, because obviously I was wrong. I knew that clearly I had disobeyed my parents. And this obviously is what happens when you disobey. And that's my story. It has affected me, well, since 1983. Having a fair amount of therapy in my 20s, I have to say, I thought I'd dealt with it. And I know it's a lifelong process. I know, you know, once you get diagnosed with PTSD, there may be things that sort of have it flare, that trigger you. And I'll be damned, you know, hadn't happened to me for years. And yesterday, listening to the testimony of Blasey Ford, listening to how Dr. Christine Blasey Ford was treated, hearing the derision in Grassley's voice or in Graham's voice, hearing the indignation of Kavanaugh, damn, I got triggered. And I know I'm not the only one. I know that many people had the need to just sort of be together yesterday to tell our stories, to say, yeah, I know. Yeah, it happened to me too. And it is my hope that we continue to tell our stories and that we tell them louder and louder. It is my hope that anyone who questions why a teenager wouldn't report is surrounded by choruses of us telling our truths at them at the top of our lungs for possibly the rest of their natural lives. That's a vision I'm holding to. So, there I am. That's my story. I want to hear from you. If you have questions, if you have other things, please do call in with the comments. How did the hearings affect you? How do you think we should proceed from here? And what do we do with all this rage? Those are the questions I'm starting off with. What do you have? 503-231-8187. Just to encourage you to follow along throughout the week on Facebook. We can find us there, Positively Revolting. In the Twitterverse, you can find us at Positive Revolt. And so let's go ahead and take our first caller. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning, Blanning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for what you just shared. The hearings, oh, man. I just, you know, let me just start off by saying I'm a performer. I come from a family of performers. Standing up in front of big crowds, that's my comfort zone. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Talking with you right now, not easy.
Right.
And that's a really strange feeling. But all I could think of yesterday is the courage that it took for this woman to go before the entire country and share her story. And I just want to say, I can't imagine being 15. I had a horrible incident 14 years ago. And, you know, I was 39 years old. And I shared it with a friend. The friend was brave enough to go on my behalf and actually prosecute the man. And he was in the Coast Guard. It was a big story I'd rather not get into details.
I understand.
But the point of it is, I was 35, or I'm sorry, 39, 39, and I kept it a secret. It's this ingrained thing in our society, and I had been drinking, and my feeling was that it was my fault, and yeah. That's a 39-year-old woman.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe me, you had had all kinds of therapy. I started therapy when I was like, I don't know, 10. Like, you know, I was one of these kids or parents, just, you know, it was just part of what you do. You go to see a therapist. And at 39 years of age, I couldn't speak out about it. I felt I was wrong. I felt I'd brought it on. I had been drinking. You know, and there's this feeling that the woman is wrong and that she's at fault. And, the fact that anybody could ask a question, why didn't a 15-year-old go to the, why didn't a 39-year-old,
yeah.
You know, I had somebody else do it. And the result, you know, there was prosecution and there was all of that, but but I was still afraid to come forward. You know, I was still afraid to speak out. So I just, it's very, no matter what happens as a result of yesterday, it's so empowering that this woman came forward, had the courage to do this. You know, she's clearly educated. She's clearly, you know, a smart woman. And you could see that she was really rocked to her core, and I love your last question about what do we do with the rage, and I think we keep talking. I think we keep talking. There's no going back. Me Too has come forward, and things will change. I have total faith. And I just think we got to keep speaking out. This is my first time publicly ever speaking about this. And it's important. It's important because maybe by my speaking out, you know, now I'm 54, and maybe by my speaking out, maybe somebody hearing me will speak out.
Yeah.
Like that's why. That's the only reason, you know.
Yes.
That's the only, in my opinion, that's the only reason to do it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for doing that this morning. Thank you for taking that step.
You're welcome. You. Thank you for what you do.
Take care of you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I also want to go ahead and throw in a word on self-care. Please, as we move through this and as we feel that rage, I want to stop the rage. Rage can be healing, right? Expressing it, using that energy as a fuel to have us work together for awesome, and I mean that in the awe sense of the word, awesome social change that needs to happen. That's important. But I also know that if we are in PTSD flares, if we are flooding, if we are having heightened anxiety and we can't stop crying, we need to take care of ourselves first. And so there's a lot of good information out there on self-care. And I want to, just touch on some, you know, please have good friends. And if you don't, have close friends that you can share this information with and have a plan that they can help you remember when you're flooding, that they can not soothe you in a way to say, oh, now, honey, you're just fine. That doesn't really help. But to be with you and to sort of help you find a plan of action that can help you feel a little more in control is important. Making sure that you're eating, that you're sleeping, these things are important. And you know, if you want to eat comfort food, I think that's fine, right? It's why it's there. It's comfort food. Maybe it's not actually going to be your choice for healthy food, you know, 7 days a week in the future. But right now, if a giant bowl of carbs is going to get you through, eat it. I'm just saying, there are bigger fish to fry at the moment. You know, if you need to unplug from the news, if you need to just put on some music and turn off the news for a day, please do that. Connect with others that are having this experience. Find those feeds in the social media and band together. I think that there's more to say on all of that. And I think we probably have some good tips for each other too. But I want to make sure that we do at least address the need for self-care and for taking care of ourselves while we may be having issues around PTSD. All right. So let's go ahead and talk to Linda. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Nani. Thanks for the show. So we're talking about early experiences and whether they got triggered. And I was surprised yesterday to find that a similar experience to what Dr. Blasey Ford was describing, or similar enough for me as a teenager, did kind of, you know, it's not that it was forgotten. And in fact, I have dealt with it in therapy very thoroughly,
right,
with a psychologist in EMDR. And much of my rage diminished after 3 years of therapy. Took a bit of time, but I really did change in terms of, and what, where the rage went was unfortunately on family members, or, you know, redirected at maybe appropriate targets to be angry at, but not, but the anger was out, was much greater. And the way I really learned that was once I was done with my therapy, I was a much less angry person in general and rageful. But I'll tell you that I tried to remember that I was thinking about what was it that triggered me. And there's two incidents where I was assaulted by teenage boys in my home with other people and friends around, not stopping it. And one of them resulted in me being hung by my ankle from a kitchen cabinet door. And another had me laying on the floor having a boy stuff a burnout cigarette in my mouth because I refused to kiss him. And yeah, they were both pretty awful when you say them out loud. I did put them away inside me because I was really angry at those people, and I was angry at the people who saw it. But I also did think it was partly my fault, because internal to me, I had a real desire to be liked by these young men.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wanted to be, I wanted them to be, quote, attracted to me. I was not, I had not had sex. I was 14 and I had not had sex. And I'd had a, you know, a father who was absent and stuff, and I was just ripe for wanting male attention. And so I did not want what they did to me, but I still felt definitely complicit. You know, I felt like it was at least half my fault that it went that way. And because others didn't try to stop it, really, that, you know, I do think the presence of others might have stopped it from direct rape. But, you know, to actually like pulling off my clothes and putting the penis in, but it didn't stop the sexual assault. And I did find myself in tears about it. And one of the things that I'm very concerned about is that if they today, and it looks like they're going to, I'm not counting it completely out, if they confirm him today at 10:30, I think that's even worse, because here came the best being, you know, for opening statement, you know, kind of had you going, aw, gee, though not really knowing his stance on things. But he became so belligerent and so refused to answer the questions and refused to say that a FBI investigation was appropriate for him, that I was just furious. And I'm wondering how I'm going to feel later today. I think I'm going to feel pretty upset, maybe more upset today, because we had our spokesman up there and they're rejecting it. The people who run this country are rejecting it. They won't even allow a FBI investigation. And I think there goes my rage again, because how helpless can we feel when we as women stand up and say our truth and it just gets shut the F down? So That's what I'm concerned about today, and I appreciate the show. And, you know, I've done my calls to various senators. I've tried to bring up other things that should impeach him, like he lied about his relationship to Justice Kosinski. He almost undoubtedly had pornography, and there are three federal employees willing to testify that he knew that Judge Kosinski of his sexually inappropriate activities before, long before he was kicked off the Ninth Circuit Court. He lied about that to this Senate, and not one of them is bringing it up.
I'm gonna.
So I feel like even the Democrats are complicit, and I'm just furious about what's going to happen. And that's, I guess, where my
people have called to ask the question: where are protests happening today? And I don't know of any.
That's a good question.
And so I'm putting that out there on the air. If anyone knows of a plan, when if the confirmation goes forward today, I'm going to say if, because hope springs eternal, right? I'm going to, you know, say if, and if it happens, what is our plan? How do we stay visible and outraged? And again,
I say we call for his immediate impeachment. We go ahead and call for the investigation, call for the proof, and have him impeached for lying. They can't impeach a justice.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it out there that Amnesty International, and I have never heard of this before, but Amnesty International actually issued a call for a halt on the Kavanaugh nomination until a full investigation is possible. And
the American Bar Association.
Yes, and a complete turnaround on their position. So those things, you know, it's like, let's amplify that. And Linda, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thank you, Annie. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Take care. And there is so much to talk about. Let's go ahead and talk to Franny. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having this.
Thank you for calling.
I'm going to try not to cry, just because I'm not as articulate as I want to be when I do cry.
So. I understand.
But there's a lot going on. With me today, it is triggering. I am the person who called earlier to find out about marches in Portland. I do have a little bit of information.
Great.
Around that, but I've done Google searches. I haven't been able to find it. But apparently, at noon today, there are marches all over at different, or protests at different, outside of different Senate office buildings.
Okay.
So this is through Moms Rising. I can send you a link after.
Sure.
If you want.
If you want to just post that to the Positively Revolting Facebook page, I think that will be the best way to get it.
I'm not on Facebook anymore.
I think that's a beautiful thing. Never you mind. You can send it to positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you.
But so they asked if you want to get involved, take action, and then apparently I was supposed to get an alert on my phone, but I didn't. That was a few hours ago. But maybe I did something wrong because I've been having anxiety. I'll send it to you. Okay. The other thing is, my story as a victim is very long, and so I was victimized many times prior to the age of 15. I'm now 55. The last thing that happened was something that didn't happen, but was so horrifying that it haunts me to this day. I've done a lot of therapy, and I've really gotten past pretty much everything that happened to me. But the last thing, I was 15, and my friend and I were walking home from a movie in my hometown on a summer night, and or the fall, I don't even know. I know it was warm out, and we were walking, and a group of what I think was college boys, white blonde looking boys, pulled up in a car, pulled over to the curb, grabbed me off the street, and started putting me into the back seat of the car. All the boys were laughing. The car was filled with boys. I'm a fighter. I had been a fighter since I was 10 years old, and I just started kicking, screaming, yelling, just like a wild thing. And they laughed and put me back outside the car and sped off down this major busy street in Brookline, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And my friend was just standing there on the sidewalk, also traumatized, you know, just ashen. And we didn't even really talk about it, you know. I was so scared, obviously, you know. And it's like I would have been gang raped that night, you know. And the thought that went through my head was, why is everyone always trying to rape me? Because I had been raped by a family member, starting at age 6, and then somebody had a babysitter's boyfriend had tried to molest me. I had also kicked back then and fought him off and just left that place. But anyway, so yeah, that story, and it is triggering, and I have worked, like, you're triggered it yesterday, and you know, I feel like the American women are being gang raped by this group of men who knows full well what this guy did, and I can look at his face and know that he's that guy. I recognize him.
You know, I think that's the thing that's really triggering for many of us, because I think we all do recognize that smirk and that vacillation between anger and outrage at you know, we're hurting his career, right?
Yeah.
There's, I mean, our lives, well, come on, we're girls, we're women, what? He's important. Yeah. He's got a career to maintain. He's worked really hard for this. As if being seated on the Supreme Court is some sort of God-given right.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Franny.
I did want to say one last thing, and I'm sorry, I don't want to take too much time, but I just wanted to say that what I realized, too, watching her and watching him, was I saw real power in her and ersatz power in him and in everybody else there who was planning on voting for him. They're not really powerful. She's powerful. That's true power. So
thank you very much for your call today. And thanks for sending me that link. All right.
No problem.
You take care. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm Ani. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. The show, for 24 years, has, you know, encouraged us to decry the wrongs of this world, the old world, which is crumbling around us, while we build the new world together, to revolt in a positive manner, to turn it over. And damn, no time like the present. So, we're talking about the Kavanaugh hearings. We're talking about Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony. And we're talking about our own stories and how this really feels like another watershed moment. Because there are very few people that I spoke with yesterday that were not being really viscerally impacted by the testimony we were hearing and by the idea that this is the time we have to share our stories. We have to break the silence. Our silence has never protected us. It merely reinforces rape culture. And so, silent no more. I encourage you, if you are ready, please call in, share your story. I'm also going to caution us to use FCC appropriate language. I know it's hard. And I said to my partner as I was on my way down to the station this morning, my biggest challenge today is not swearing on the air. I get that. I'm just going to ask that we all make a huge effort to not. All right. Please call 503-231-8187. Good morning, Annalisa. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I feel so outraged, and I'm already very upset about the result yesterday, that all I could think of, this is Professor Anita Hill all over again, except 200 times worse. Because I watched that, almost 30 years ago. And Arlen Specter, who is now dead, and Orrin Hatch, I remember...
Who somehow or another is still alive and more loathsome than ever.
Yeah. So he's on this committee again. Anyway, I thought one of the most outside of the compelling story of Dr. Ford, when they shut off the prosecutor, Rachel Mitchell, when she started asking Kavanaugh about the July 1st date, 1982, on his calendar, and she started getting to the nitty-gritty, because two of the people that Professor Ford mentioned were on that party that he went to, were on that list on his calendar, and that's when I don't think it was Lindsey Graham that interrupted, but it might have been him, very aggressively interrupted, and from that point on they did not allow her any more questions. That was a very telling thing, where I started to realize nothing will stop these people. No matter who comes forward, how many people, how many women, nothing will stop them. They are ruthless, completely.
Well, and again, this is what we expect, right? Because we have never seen women's experience held in the same esteem as powerful men's reality. Okay,
and they turned the whole thing against the real victim and made Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, the victim of this what they called a circus. They made it a circus. But what I am planning to do today is to send $10 to Professor Ford's attorneys. I have some information that I wrote down just in support of all her legal fees, if she has any, and whatever, just as in support, maybe send her a financial donation. I don't know what all the costs are, but it must be tremendous. And what women can do, speaking out is good, but it is not enough anymore, because, like I said, nothing will stop these people. It didn't stop them with Professor Anita Hill, and she was just plowed into the ground, called names, and that's 27 years ago. Yeah. And now they were silent. These 11 men, they were silent, and they put a woman Republican to ask questions of Dr. Ford. But you could see that Rachel Mitchell was starting to really get on the side of Dr. Ford. When she said, "I have no more questions," you knew that she believed her. And when she started questioning Brett Kavanaugh and came to that date on the calendar, she was cut off. Anyway,
thanks very much.
Want to compliment Cable for having this live yesterday. It was some analysis in between that I could listen to, were excellent.
Yes.
And so that was really
I really
well.
I appreciated
you.
Very
Thank
much
you, Annie.
Thank
Bye.
You Annalisa. I appreciated very much the Pacifica commentators. I thought that was they did an excellent job of making sense of something so farcical. Right. So many places to go, and I think pretty much what I should do is take the next caller. Good morning, Helen. You're on the air.
Hi. I also saw that the July 1st, like, whoa, she's gotten there very carefully and quietly, and then I could not believe what happened. But the other thing I saw on Twitter was that the Jesuit magazine is no longer supporting Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Which is excellent. That is, like, it's going to have to creep through to have people you know, build their power even more so. And I just was wondering, you know, I don't think you've been doing much astrology on the radio. Somebody even asked me about that. And it just seems like there's purpose in all of this. And I don't know. I just don't know where it is. But it seems somehow that we're all growing.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's purpose in all of this. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there. I believe that things happen for reasons.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Helen.
Yeah.
That's also kind of a tricky thing. It's like, all right, here's what's happened. Do I think I got raped in 1983 for some sort of bigger grand cause? No, actually, that was caused by, you know, somebody trying to prove that they were alpha male and that conquest was somehow or another important to him and that my feelings weren't. So it's tricky, right? Now that we have had this experience, now that we are sharing this experience with each other and that we realize that we can unite and that we can channel our rage into ways of maybe fueling some creative and positive social change, maybe we can use that rage to fuel the actions that will actually break the rape culture that surrounds us and, you know, bring the patriarchy to its knees. Okay, I would love that. Let's hope and let's work towards that end. That is what I think, you know, things happen for a reason. Well, things happen. But what we can do with that experience, we can be purposeful about. And I think maybe that's a better way to frame it. Because otherwise we get into something that I'm probably going to have some issues with. All right. So with that, let's go ahead and we'll talk to Emily. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. So what came up for me when you were telling your story was that that pinnacle point where inside your own self-belief system, you switched over to saying that his feelings mattered more than yours. He won some internal battle inside your head.
Yeah.
And
I'll go one better than that. Actually, I also remember very clearly thinking that his sister, my friend, was upstairs within a good yell, and I was mortified that she would find out how horrible her brother was.
Because you take on the shame. You own the shame.
Yep.
You believe it's yours to carry.
That's exactly
right. And
it's
not. That is something that is put upon you. And then, you know, and in a much more ubiquitous, insidious kind of way, culturally, as women, we are constantly being told in very, like, minute and then overt kind of ways that our feelings matter less.
Yeah.
Constantly. And, you know, and even just the very nature of a woman being emotional, so therefore she has so many emotions, they must not be as valuable. That kind of rhetoric goes along. And that it cuts away her ability to think rationally and to speak clearly and to make a consistent, you know, testimony about her experience. And it's constant undermining. And it's, and I experienced that so much throughout my life. And yes, I'm, you know, a Me Too person, but the most powerful thing that I've been clinging to is this new thing coming up in my feed of, like, believe women. And the first thing, you know, hashtag believe women, believe yourself. That's the, you know, where the march begins. It's inside yourself, inside your heart, inside your mind. You've got to root out the very first seed, wherever it was when you were a toddler and your brother got the bigger piece of cookie or whatever, and he was catered to more, whatever, like, little thing, or you found out that you got paid a dollar less in your first job with, you know, next to the boy behind the counter, or, like, whatever moments that you remember, and then somehow you went, well, yeah, that's okay because I'm a girl and I need to eat less, or that's okay, I mean, he's, you know, he's able to lift heavier bags, so that makes sense, you know, or whatever.
You're talking about rooting out the voice of the patriarchy, and I think that that's...
Inside,
yeah, I think that that is actually pretty essential. I can say that, you know, for many of us, that experience is pretty direct in that that whole self-blame is set up, right? And whether or not we think we're less than, we also get that women traditionally, and in fact, even currently, though there does seem to be some movement this direction, are pretty much held to blame for what happens to us. Yeah. And so, you know, again, just like I wasn't going to tell my parents because I had actually experienced molestation in my family, right, as a four-year-old. And I had a couple of creepy uncles that were pretty gropey. And when I finally told my mom when I was 10 that I didn't want to, you know, go to some family thing because, you know, this uncle's pretty handsy. And I was pretty uncomfortable with that. Her immediate response was not, oh my God, my darling child, let's go confront that guy together. Her response was, oh yeah, men are like that. Don't get alone with them.
Right.
And
so, I wish that both things could happen. I wish that both that we could not be stuck in victimhood, that we could be survivors. We can have agency. Yeah, we can have accountability and recognize what mistakes that we made that made us vulnerable, that made, you know, even as children, that we can have the agency to recognize that this is like, yeah, those are wolves.
What made us vulnerable, honestly, is male violence.
Well, that's
true. We got to, again, remember that the blame gets placed squarely on the rapist. Yeah. It's not because, wow, I got confused at the wrong time. Sure, that was a factor, and I did get confused. There is an emotional component, like an emotional abusive component that goes along with physical abuse usually. And rapists know that, right? So they try to get you off of your center. Still, it is.
I want to be powerful, and I want them to be accountable. I don't want my accountability to have to be taken in a way in order to justify their accountability. We should, like, everybody needs to be accountable. Everybody. They need to pay the price exactly for what they did. And it shouldn't be, like, excused off the table, you know? And
right.
We shouldn't be put into this humiliation, shame spotlight to reveal, like, replay and relive our... It is humility. It is shame that is the experience of being raped or molested or having any kind of your power taken away. I want my power back, you know, and that means, like, really important that I believe myself, my feelings are as important as theirs, and yeah, I'm accountable, but that doesn't excuse their behavior. 100% they're responsible for their behavior.
100% they are responsible for their behavior. It does not mean that we are not powerful. Thanks very much, Emily. Let's go ahead and talk to Chris. We have only a few minutes left, and I want to try to work in this last call. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air. Chris, I'm not sure if you're there or if you may be listening to the radio and therefore 30 or 40 seconds behind where I'm at now. I don't know. So we're going to check back with you in just a moment. I want to talk about a couple of things, right? So the hearings are set to happen at 10:30 today, or the confirmation vote, I suppose I should say. One of the things that has come up as a challenge is, but this is America. He hasn't had his day in court. This is America. He's innocent until proven guilty. We can't just accept her testimony as the truth. Okay. And, you know, I agree. If this were actually a criminal trial in which Kavanaugh was facing sentencing, facing criminal charges, then it would be absolutely inappropriate to just say, oh, well, she says he did it. Let's just go ahead and throw him away for life. On the other hand, that's not what this is. This is a confirmation to the highest court in this land where this man will have maybe 40 years. Okay, so he's in his 50s. Maybe 30 years of sitting in judgment in a position of great power. One of the most powerful positions of the land. Is there enough doubt at this point to say that maybe he doesn't have the character to do that? Yeah, There's certainly enough doubt at this point to say he doesn't have the character to do that. He's not facing a criminal trial. He is facing a confirmation to one of the most powerful seats of the land. That is a fine difference. And when we hear that challenge, I want us to remember that and to have that as a ready comeback. So good morning, Chris. You're there.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Thank you for your program. I real quickly want to say that the three incidences that were charged against sexual assault or Kavanaugh mirrored my experiences. And, of course, as you hear the testimonies all day, the rage just boils up and all those moments come right back to you.
Yeah.
But I want to say this. Real quickly, I was very young, 13 or 14 at the first incident, very naive, and just came out of Catholic, very strict Catholic school, had no clues about sex much. Anyway, my point is I went with my neighbor friend in my neighborhood just a few blocks away. She said, come down and let's go visit some people that we knew from high school. I was young, but she knew in high school. Went there, boys, alone in a house, four or five of them. I had no clue what anything meant, really. Anyway, in the meantime, she disappears into a room, and I'm worried, and then there's a line at the door, and I'm just don't know anything about what's going on. Sitting on the stairs like, wow, this is weird vibe. One of the guys comes up to me and says, oh, you're such a prude, unzips his pants and throws his penis in my face. I ran out of the house, left her there because I was naive. That really put my guard up. I was able to, for the next 7 or 8 years until I decided I was ready, able to be around men who respected that. And I really want to thank those men in my life all through high school and first 2 years of college. Had a lot of dates, had a lot of relationships, and every single man respected my choice. I wasn't ready for sex. I want to thank them. Now, in the meantime, when I was 30, I got raped by a date rape. Locked in a room for 8 or 10 hours, fighting for my life. And I was very strong, and I fought very hard. And I came out of that realizing that I'm a strong woman. I didn't go to the police for any of these. I'm a strong woman, and I will definitely destroy this man's life in the town I lived in. So I went for personal revenge just by spreading his name all over anywhere that mattered. I just want to say there are many good men who respect women. Those are the people I choose to be around if possible. I know we all don't know people's history, but I look at the person and I say, do I get a feeling this man is going to respect me? I tried to protect myself, and I was able to have very success once I decided I needed to take control of my life. I will make the decisions. Doesn't always happen. Force takes over. I was controlled by a man for 8 hours, but he paid a big price for it, physically and socially. And that's my story. I just have to tell you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having it.
Thank you for calling this morning. And with that, we are so very nearly out of time. There's a lot more to say. There's a lot more stories to tell. I think it's super important that we continue to hear each other, that we continue to tell our truths, that we, you know, yell it to the sky, that we tell it to each other, that we work together and channel this rage into social change, that we use this rage to smash the patriarchy into 1,000 little tiny pieces. You've been listening to Positively Revolting. You can contact us on Facebook, Positively Revolting, in the Twitterverse, at Positive Revolt, Gmail, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. I want to hear your stories. If there's enough want for this, I will record you, and we will make a very powerful program of our stories woven together. Who's in? Let me know. And with that, I'll talk to you next week. Take care. Take care of yourself, and keep speaking your truth out loudly. Cheers.